श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतन की जय, श्री वेणुगीत की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो good evening to all of you. Welcome. Thanks for your presence here today. On the last 23 classes we made for Venugita, today we are reaching our very last meeting. I'm not a farewell person, so no need to enter into nostalgia, since this type of contents are permanent, eternal, ever fresh, so there's always opportunity to continue speaking about this, hearing about this, and reflecting about this. But in some way, we are getting to the end of the series today, in class number 24, where we will be studying the last verse of the chapter, 21st chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll be studying verse number 20, which, as we mentioned, will be a verse spoken by Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit, as we have seen, and we will see also today, again. The first verses of the chapter are an introduction to the Venugita per se, by Sukadev Goswami, speaking to the Raj. And the very last verse, today's verse 20, verse 20, it's again Sukadev Goswami wrapping up the whole and reflecting back in relation to what has been just shared in the form of Venugita. So in this last verse, Sukadev Goswami will not only wrap up the content of the whole song, but also give like the gist of it all in one single verse, if you will. But before he does so, in this particular verse, as I told you yesterday, if possible, I would like to make a brief recap of the whole Venugita today. Briefly, but going very quickly through what every single verse have shared. A little bit more extended at once, how Sukadev Goswami will mention the last verse, but some brief recap as well. In a way that we do not forget, no? Because as you may imagine, I mean, we can continue speaking and hearing about this, but if we do not recap, we may forget many things. What do you think? That happens? Have you learned by heart some verse, and have you forgotten a verse, maybe? No? You never learn a verse. Okay, try it. You can learn a verse, but if you don't recap the verses every sometime, they may like disappear in the ether or somewhere into the bodega of the subconscious. So it's important that we recap whatever we have heard. If we have taken notes, of course we take notes ideally to reread the notes at some point. Sometimes I've seen devotees taking notes, but never seeing them reading the notes they've taken. So, well, of course, it's some value of taking at the moment, but they are therefore being revisited. And eventually, of course, whatever we have heard, whatever we have recapped, whatever we have taken notes of, also we can share with others. And through all these forms, the message establishes more and more inside of ourselves. Not only like fixed information, but genuine insight becomes part of us. We want all this to become part of us, or we want to become part of it, if you will, somehow or other. So it's important to understand how our mind memory works and how we can deal with that properly. So let's do some brief recap so we can somehow refresh what we had been studying the previous 23 classes, and then we go to today's verse and last class. So as I mentioned, the Venugita officially starts, the song of the gopis starts in verse number 7 till verse 19. That's a Gopi Gita, technically speaking, officially speaking. But the whole chapter is also called Venugita. So it encompasses some other verses in the beginning, first six verses given by Sukadev Goswami and last verse. So in the first six verses, Sukadev Goswami basically depicts the scenario where the Venugita will be spoken, or basically the scenario in relation to which the Venugita will be spoken. Because remember, Venugita, in one sense we could say, is the song of the flute, Krishna playing the flute, or Venugita is the song about the flute, the song of the gopis in the village about Krishna's playing the flute in the forest. So first, the first scenario that Sukadeva Goswami presents is what's going on in the forest. So we are transported to that particular moment, autumn season, particular special time, and the birds described, as we can hear here, flowers blossoming, trees giving fruit, and all in its very specific, perfect, idyllic Vrindavan way. And the scenario is Purvan Lila, these mid-morning pastimes, when it's also called Gocharana Lila, where Krishna with Balaram and the cowherd boys and the cows are heading towards the forest. So this scenario will be appearing many times throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Ram Krishna, many times, Ram Krishna. The Gopas, many times. But they will include Balaram over and over again. They will invoke the presence and influence of Dauji just to clear away all possible suspicion about themselves. And they are glorifying the two brothers together, which are worthy of praise for every inhabitant of Raj. But for them, Ram Krishna refers to Krishna and Krishna. Ram is another name of Krishna for the gopis. So the perfection of the eyes, akshambatam phalamidam na parambidaman, is to contemplate those particular forms. And they, in their ecstasy, start to describe that form they are seeing in their hearts. During the next verse, verse number 8, the gopis will start to describe in further detail the decorations that accompany them with different flowers and buds in their turbans and in a very detailed way, and how they stand, again, Krishna and Balaram, as the best of dancers. So many times this idea of Natavara or kings of dances is there. So they visualize this particular situation. And again, for them, this is converging into the figure of Krishna himself, but Baladeva is facilitating their Madhuri expression by being invoked in this context. Then in verse number 9, the gopis say, Gupyaki machara dayam kushalam shmavenu. What must the flute have done to obtain such a privileged position at the feet of Krishna, at the lips of Krishna? So Sri Radha is said to be speaking this verse. So classical dynamic, she starts to appreciate the fortune of the flute, but then, she starts to see all, and the flute's ancestors are crying due to the good fortune of their descendant. You know, the bamboo trees or the river, the bamboo fruits on the river, so it's the mother and the father of the flute, all of them are crying in the form of whirlpools and honey dripping from the trees. So all of them are crying and celebrating the good fortune of their heir to the throne, the flute now. And in that context then, Sri Radha also expressed transcendental envy, saying like, oh, this flute is drinking all the nectar of Krishna's lips, he's not leaving even a drop for us, and this flute is male in nature, and we have to hear in the distance the scream of pleasure of the flute, and we have nothing there is for us, so what to do? No? So let's find what austerities we can do so we may be born next life as a flute, as a bamboo stick, and we may have the fortune of end up in drinking Krishna's adaramrita, the nectar of his lips. So this will be the classical dynamic or structure of each and single verse. No? Gopis appreciating the good fortune of each particular species in Braj, and then praying to be born in that particular form in their next life, and deprecating their own lack of fortune with deep humility out of their topmost prem. And in the context of that, invoking different names of Krishna for each verse. We won't enter into that detail again now. But remember that every single name of Krishna in each verse, which is different mostly, have a particular purpose in that particular context. So do not forget that ever. When you read the verse and you see a name of Krishna, it's that name in particular is there for some particular reason. So do not rest till you discover that. Then verse number 10, the gopis start to appreciate the good fortune of the earth and how Vrindavan is spreading the glory of the earth. Due to Vrindavan being located on planet Earth, the earth is famous because of such a playground is there in which Krishna is performing his lilas, basically. And in the context of that, the gopis start to describe the peacocks dancing for Krishna. Seeing Krishna as one of them, he has so many peacock feathers, he seems like a peacock to the peacocks. So they start to sing and dance for Krishna, and Krishna starts to sing and dance for them. And the two of them start to dance together in a circle, Krishna in the center, and other creatures in the forest looking in the distance the whole event and become stunned. stamba, which means immobile. Okay, very brief summary. We spend more than an hour for each verse, sometimes three or four. Verse number 11. Now is the turn of the deer. Remember the female deer? Which were here in the flute, and the nature of the deer is that it's naturally attracted to the flute, even though generally a hunter may be behind the flute calling the deer to kill him. And now the Krishna hunter is playing the flute, and the female deer is just irresistibly attracted towards that. And not only that, the gopi sees, no? Because they see, now come different examples of different species attracted in different rasas towards Krishna. That's what the gopis see. So they perceive, the female deer attracted with cupidity towards Krishna, with madhurya sentiments. And not only that, but their husbands, the Krishna Sara deer, the female black deer, is not putting any opposition to their wives going to Krishna, but actually they are supporting them and they are joining them. And the gopis say, we see our bad luck, gosh. Our husbands are not that favorable. If they will be just like this example, and so on. So again, through each and every verse, their purva rag is growing exponentially. The pressure cooker is growing more and more. It's whistling more and more. Even though they try to hide their own bhav, they end up projecting that everywhere and anywhere. In verse number 12, it's the turn of the devis, or the heavenly goddesses that accompany, that are flying in different celestial airplanes, and they hear the flute, and again, another Madhuri example, they become affected by Cupid, and the flowers in their hairs that are decorating their braids, due to ecstasy, they start to tremble, and the flowers fall from heaven and bathe Krishna in Pushpanjali, basically, rain flower, if you will. And again, the husbands of the devis are there next to them in their airships, and they are not complaining. They are not saying, hey, how can you get attracted to Krishna? I'm your husband. But the husbands themselves feel attracted to Krishna. Because he is Krishna. He's the all-attractive. Which means everyone becomes attracted without exception. It's not just only males, only females, only humans, only this. This is the experience of the gopis here. Everything and everyone is attracted to him. So his call, his attraction is beyond gender, beyond specific limitation. No? I get attracted if the other one is a female, if the other one is my same species. I'm not attracted to a cockroach. I'm not attracted to whatever, this or that. But in relation to Krishna, he's like a magnet and everything goes unresistibly towards him. Verse number 13, here we have the gopis try too much Madhuri examples, so their own situation is becoming more evident. So let's try to speak about something else, Vatsalya. Let's go to the Vatsalya camp. So they start to speak about the cows and the calves. How the cows are eating grass, the calves are drinking the milk from the cows, from the udders of their mothers. And when the flute is sounding, because in every verse almost the word Benu is there, speaking about the flute sounds, and this happens. So the cows become stunned. They are eating grass, and when the cows, when the flute sound, they become like flower glasses, and the grass starts to fall from their mouths because they may become totally mesmerized by the flute. And the calves who are drinking the milk from the mother's udders also become like stunned by the flute. So the milk keeps coming because milk is a sign of affection, and especially when Krishna plays the flute, so much affection comes. And the calves are not drinking the milk. They just become, when the open mouth and milk is coming, and they're like just bathing them, like an abhishek to the cows. But both mother and children become totally stunned, and they start to cry so much that even if Krishna is playing in front of them the flute, they cannot see him. So it is said they embrace him in their minds because they have such a torrent of tears that they cannot see Krishna. So they see him in the core of their hearts. Then verse 14 is about the birds, the sage-like birds, who hear the flute of Krishna from the high branches of the trees, remain with half closed eyes, enter into mauna, are not speaking, and just become in samadhi, like in trance, receiving the sound of the flute. And of course the commentators said, well, these birds seem like sages, or maybe these birds are sages who took birth as birds in Vrindavan. and have risen, and there's a whole parallel with the branches of the trees and the Vedas being a tree and the highest branches being the Bhagavat, and from that highest branch they have the best possible darshan of Krishna in Vrindavan and so on. So many nice things. I intended of telling the whole class again, but it will take like maybe 25 hours or something. So. Verse 15. Let's go to the aquatic section now. The rivers, especially River Jamuna, Manasa Ganga was mentioned. Again, an example of Madhurya, according to the Gopis' projection. So the rivers hear the flute, and they start to move in the opposite direction, generally not seen. Now they change course, and they start to flow in the direction of Krishna's feet, and not in the direction of their husbands. They say that the husband's rivers are the ocean, because all the rivers converge in the ocean. But in this case, we see the rivers are not going to the husband, are going to Krishna. So again, the gopis are projecting, we should do the same. Instead of going to our husband and family, we should converge in Krishna. So the rivers are flowing in that direction. They are embracing Krishna's feet. They are holding to those feet. And then they are presenting their very essence at the feet of Krishna's, offering the form of lotus flowers. Mm-hmm. And also showing whirlpools, which represent like their ecstatic mental agitation by the sound of the flute. Mm-hmm. Then verse 16, we go to the sky, from water to sky. And again, from Madhurya, the gopis go to the Sakya department and they start to see the clouds. And they remember, oh, it's autumn, but it's a particular hot day in autumn. So Krishna is with his friends and cows, and they are considerably affected by heat, transcendentally speaking, tired. So the clouds, opportunity for service. So the clouds come and they start to expand out of love. Now, you never see a cloud expanding and growing and growing and becoming like a giant umbrella. And creates an umbrella to cover Krishna and throw very sweet raindrops. Not like water, but very like soft raindrops. So it's using its body to make an umbrella, and it's using its essence in the form of water to delight Krishna and his friends. Not only Krishna. So an example of Sakya. If we were in the rivers, then the water of the rivers evaporate. We went to the clouds. Then verse 17, which is the turn of the Pulindis, of the ladies who lives, the outcast ladies living outside of Raj. Remember that they were in the forest and they see the kumkum of this saffron paste, red powder, in the grass, and they just by seeing that become ecstatic. And the whole background is that kumkum was in the body of one of Krishna's beloveds, and that ended up in Krishna's feet, and from Krishna's walking in the forest that ended up in Vrindavan's forest in the grass. And when the Pulindis saw this, by seeing that became ecstatic, agitated by Cupid, another Madhuri example. They smelled that and they rubbed it all over their bodies, and they only attained purnatva, or completeness. So, and we mentioned how the background of this is there was some small meeting between Radha and Krishna here. It was not officially a consummation, so Purvaraga remains, but that's how it is explained, that this kumkum came from the body of the beloved of Krishna, still in Purvaraga. What else? Verse number 18, which is another verse invoked by Sri Radha, and it's a very famous one, which was a praise to Sri Giriraj, Antaya Madrila Vala Haridas Sabarja, and so on. So Sri Radha is considering Sri Govardhan as the topmost of Hari's servant, Haridas Sabarja, his body offered as a playground, which what the gopis want, basically, and serving Krishna in so many ways, paniya, suryabhasa, kandara, kandamolai, offered beverages and grass, water slides, and caves, and edible roots, herbal medicine for love sickness, and so many things, as we mentioned. So the gopis, again, were worshipping, glorifying, but lamenting on their lack of fortune and praying for a better situation in the near future. So those are the very first 18 verses. So now we will do a little bit longer recap of the last verse we saw last class, which was verse 19. And then we will go to verse 20, which is relatively short verse, but of course, you know, there's always some content to unpack. So in our previous class, we saw verse 19, which is the last verse sung by the gopis directly, And also it's a type of wrapping up and summarizing of the whole Venugit, in which the gopis are speaking to one another, saying, Sakya, all friends, Krishna and Balaram. As Krishna and Balaram are passing through the forest with their cowherd friends, leading their cows, they carry ropes to bind the cow's rear legs at the time of milking. When Lord Krishna plays on his flute, the sweet music causes the moving entities, living entities, to become stunned, and the non-moving trees to tremble with ecstasy. These things are certainly wonderful. So that was the last verse we saw yesterday. So again, gopis invoking the name of Ram, Ram Krishna, but for them Ram is none other than Krishna. And Krishna is described Gopakai with the gopas and the gopas showing compassion to Krishna or affection to Krishna by protecting him. We describe how Yashoda pleaded like the gopas, please protect my Kanaya in this way and this way, this may happen, and bathing them with her own overflowing of Vatsalya. So they go to the forest empowered by Yashoda's Vatsalya to fulfill her mission. We also explained how the sound of the flute with sweet notes sometimes can be applied to Krishna's ankle bells, entering and walking into the forest, and all the implications of that. And regarding the main example here, entities that move, stop moving, entities that are immovable, start moving, stop, no, entities that do not move, start moving, and movable entities stop moving. So we develop a little bit the idea of how difficult it is to change one's acquired nature, but how there's hope and how that's possible by the grace of Krishna's flute. The impossible mission impossible becomes mission possible. And of course the gopis are saying that, no? Let's join him. I mean, if everything is possible with such a flute. So whatever we have to change that seems impossible in our life to join him, let's try it at least. Mm-hmm. So of course they will try it quite hard and they will be successful. A very important word in this verse is Niryoga Pasha. Niryoga Pasha, remember, means the rope that Krishna and Balaram are using for tying the calves who are a little bit restless on purpose, or the cows who may kick when they are being milked on purpose, so they receive some special attention from Krishna. And sometimes Niryoga Pasha is a compound for referring to one rope, which are yellow and made of silken, or to two different robes, one of wearing on the turban, one of their shoulders. Also near yoga, we mentioned, refers to uninterrupted meeting, which is the experience of the forest dwellers when Krishna is entering the forest and spending so much time. Or near yoga means, refers pasa to the rope or the bond of affection that Krishna creates, which invokes near yoga, which basically means due to that yoga, that union, near yoga, nirvikalpa is nirgata, say the commentators. Nirvikalpa samadhi, or experience of undifferentiated trance, nirgata means is gone. And we have examples of very sober sages like the four Kumars absorbing Brahman and their meditation being interrupted by a higher meditation and being attracted to Bhagavan. And Sukadev Goswami also being absorbing Brahman, totally unattracted to anything from the world, by hearing the verses of the Bhagavatam. I'm returning to Vyasa's ashram like hypnotized. Atmaram ashtamunayo nirgranta pirukrame. And then we conclude the last class with Jiva Goswami's explaining each of the words of the verse, like implying a certain type of lamentation. When Krishna is saying cows, he's looking all of the cows even in far forest, but he's not looking for us. And every single word, we won't go again through them, but all of them, at this last verse of Venugita, they are just exploding in separation in Purvara. And basically, in ecstasy, they conclude referring to Krishna as a hunter or as a thief who has his ropes, like a good thief, has a weapon, the flute, has the rope to tie, like a good criminal. When you capture something, you have a rope to tie them. You have the gopas, they are his men. You have the army of cows. So he's pretty well, and the stolen goods are the Brajavasis' hearts. So basically, getting closer and closer by this lamentation, by this absorbed meditation, the gopis are increasing their love for Krishna. And again, as we always clarify, even though it seems like they are suffering, that suffering is tremendously sweet. Maya bisa jalahai bitari anandamai Krishna premanad bhuta charit. Very, very sweet. So, they are getting more and more attracted towards Sri Hari. So, let's go to today's verse, which is the last verse, in which Sukadeva Goswami will hint at some very interesting prospect for the gopis who have been singing this Venu Git. So, here the gopis will be described as feeling oneness with Krishna, not in the sense of Brahma Sayuja or something, another form of Sayuja, if you will, and how Krishna's Leela manifests continuously in their hearts. So, let's go to the Sanskrit. Here the meter changes also to indicate this is classical when there is some song in between a chapter and then comes a verse spoken by someone else. As a conclusion, the meter will change also to indicate song is over now. And here we are closing the curtain. So we'll go here to the classical meter. So it says like this.
Varnayantyo mitho gopya kridastan mayatam jayuhu.
So, Sri Sukadeva Goswami says to Raj Pariksit the following. Thus, narrating to one another the playful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he wandered about in the Vrindavan forest, the gopis became fully absorbed in thoughts of him. So it's a classical structure of the of the closing of a chapter, no? Like very briefly summarizing all that happened and concluding which was the fruit of such engagement. So let's go briefly to the word by word meaning and then some unpacking. So evam vidha, first part, evam vidha means such, referring to the pastimes in which the gopis were absorbed, as we will see. So such pastimes, such, evam vidha. Bhagavato refers to Bhagavan, but it means of Bhagavan, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the leelas of Bhagavan, Bhagavan leela. Yaha means which, referring to the leela, again to the pastimes. Vrindavana charinaha. Vrindavana charinaha means he who was wandering in Vrindavan. Charina, like when we sing Jai Radha Madhav, last line says what? Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. So Chari means wandering. So Vrindavana Charina. So Krishna described as Krishna wandering in the forest of Raj. This is the stage in which Krishna is in and the gopis sing in relation to that. Varnayantaha means while describing, referring to the gopis, what happened while the gopis were describing all that happened while Krishna was in the forest. Mita means among one another. So while describing among one another, this was already depicted in the first verses, how they were speaking to one another in confidence. Gopyaha, the gopis, plural. Kritaha, krita is another word for lila or play, so or pastime, the pastimes in this case. And the last part of the verse say tatmayatam jayuhu. So this is the last, very last verse, word, sorry, of the verse and the whole chapter speaks about the fruit that the gopis attained. So tatmayatam jayuhu means they attained fullness in ecstatic meditation upon Krishna. So of course we will explain what the meaning of that. So let's try to share some ideas regarding implications here. So always there's some connection with the previous verse. So let's share what the gopis say, if you will, between the previous verse and this one. It's not official in the Bhagavatam, but where acharyas reveal this in between verses. So in connection to the previous shloka, the gopis are saying, we have had enough. Now only from afar we will offer respects to the Venu Nada, the sound of the flute. We think it wise not to hear it at all. Remember what they said at the end last class. Otherwise, if we do hear the sound of Krishna's flute, our hearts will be rendered helpless and we will be tied up by his prema pasha, the rope of love, forever. Then our entire wealth, our self-control, our shyness, family values and traditions will be stolen. I mean, they want that, but they're expressing directly as if they do not. Oh, Sakhi, oh, friend, there is no need to hear the Venunad of that clever magician, the king of swindlers. Come, come, let us go where the sweet song of his flute will not enter our ears. Of course, there is no place for that to happen. It's omni, all-pervading. So again, the gopis here resort to indirect speech in a way that it's important for one to be educated into the sensibilities of romantic love and how that is expressed in classical Sanskrit poetry, because if not, it may seem like this contradictory. I mean, these ladies on one side, they love Krishna, but now they say, let's escape from him. But actually, what they mean is indirectly repeating the very same thing, which is, let's join him. So it seems they are condemning Krishna, it seems they are cursing the flute, but actually they are totally lost and found in that direction. Let me share two very nice verses that are mentioned, depicting a little bit the magic of the flute by Rupa Goswami in his Vidagdha Madhav. Let's begin with verse 135. And these are the gopis speaking in connection to the flute as we reach the closing section. Oh, friends, what is this amazing flute music? It brings no cold or snow, but still it makes me shiver. It is not a weapon, but still it cuts me to the quick. It brings no heat, but still it sets me on fire. Mm-hmm. No? So these are the magical contradictory effects of the flute. No? Mm-hmm. It has no heat, but I'm on fire because of that. I'm burning in the forest fire of separation, and so on. And the second verse, verse 6:12, one gopi is addressing the flute, says, "Oh, cruel flute, although you on the bow, you on the bow are both born from bamboo, it is to the bow that I bow that I offer my respectful obeisances, and not to you, flute. When the bow's arrow pierces the body, one dies without prolonged pain. However, when your musical arrows, which are more terrible than Cupid's darts, pierce our hearts, we experience a most horrible condition wherein we can neither live nor die." Live nor die. Again, please do not mistake, oh, poor gopis, help them. There's incredible sweetness in that particular pain. Srila Siddhartha Maharaj over and over again will emphasize this point. There is sweetness in pain. In certain pain. We're not promoting masochism. But all of us know this story, the famous case of, some sage visits one village in India, for example, classical village, and the sadhus are coming and narrating Ramayana for the week. The life of Sri Ramachandra, which has a lot of tragic content, if you want to call it somehow, tragic. They go into the forest, and Dasarath dying, and this curse here, and Sita being sent again out of the kingdom, so many things. So the sadhu is narrating all this for a week, and the whole village is attending, and the whole village is crying by hearing the Ramayana. Heartbroken, but they cannot stop hearing. But they are crying, and they can. So when the sadhu ends his narration after a week and he leaves, everyone starts to cry because he left. Everyone starts to cry because they cannot continue crying. It's like if you are, or let's go to a more contemporary example. You are seeing some movie, and you are crying because of whatever is going on in the movie, and you are crying. I come next to you and, "Stop seeing that. Why are you crying? Change that." And you will, don't touch it. Don't touch it. No, let me alone. I want to continue praying. But you're crying. There is some sweetness in that crying. If not, you're not doing it. Of course, that's an example from here. So try to apply that over there. So here the gopis are describing the effects of the flutes, like the musical arrows, which makes them in a state that is not there nor alive. Some acharyas mentioned that from all this, it should be concluded that Krishna used the flute in this context of the Bhagavad Gita to utter the Kama Beach for those who receive Diksha mantras and study Gopal Tapani, Omkar, which is clean. This called sometimes the seed of transcendental desire. In Sanskrit there are many Bija mantras, which means like seed mantras, which contain a certain particular formula and power within it. So klim, it represents like the seed of transcendental love. So some acharyas comment that Krishna's flute is vibrating the Kama Beach. The sound of the flute is not different from this Kama Beach, which is basically the original mantra. Sometimes they put like that poetically, the original mantra of Cupid. Cupid has his mantra in his own sampradaya, the original one. And it has a mysterious power to attract and enchant the minds. That's one he's called Madan Mohan or Manmata. Manmata means like mind churner. He who turns the mind. You know what happens when Cupid knocks your door and you open. Hey, go, enter. Feel at home. Okay. He will a smoothie out of your mind, basically. Churning. But here, of course, in the relation to the gopis, there is another Cupid. The Cupid of Cupids. Madan Mohan. The transcendental Cupid. I remember once I read in one book that describes dramatic place in Vrindavan, there's a nice quote that they say regarding the flute. Says that the flute has drunk Krishna's kiss of deathlessness and thus keep sounding. Krishna gave his other Amrita, the nectar of his lips, with Amrita nectar, and also Amrita means provider of immortality. So Krishna kissed the flute with immortality, if you want to put it like that. So the flute has drunk Krishna's kiss of deathlessness. Therefore, it's eternal and it will keep sounding forever. There's no way to stop that sound. Stop that flute. He drank, he received Adharamrita. So in this way, the klim, this kam bija, this seed of transcendental desire is on and on. It's the soundtrack of the whole Braja Lila, basically. And of course, Krishna, therefore, as we have mentioned already, he takes very good care of his flute, knowing the... I mean, it seems like, again, a hollow piece of dry bamboo, but it has a very powerful effect there. So Krishna will say to the flute, I will take always, it's essential, Krishna thinks for himself, it's essential, speaking to the flute, that I take good care of you. So I provide, like, my hands so you can rest on me. I will put my soft lips as a pillow so you can take rest there. I will use my long locks of hair to fan you. When we're playing you in the breeze, and so you receive some refreshment. Well, and I will use my anxious fingers to massage your feet. So Krishna is doing padasevanam to the flute while he's playing the massage. He's attending the flute, taking proper care, because he knows he depends, if you will, in the context of the lila so much on it for accomplishing all that he wants. And interestingly, also in this connection, some acharyas have described this tambul, which is the, how do you say in English, betel nut, the pan, that Krishna chews sometimes. Of course, it is mentioned that it helps Krishna for digestion, digestive purposes, and sometimes it colors Krishna's lips with red, because you can go to India, everyone is chewing that. Another topic. And the mouth and tongue become reddish. But also to say that by chewing tambul, the voice becomes sweeter. So this is the case for Krishna. Krishna is chewing tambul many times per day, to say that hundreds. Because part of the lila is to say to Radha, oh, this is so sweet, you have to taste it. So there is some excuse for kiss there. But it becomes more sweet, so therefore it will make Krishna's playing of the flute. If your voice is more sweet, your flute playing will be more sweet also. So the chewing of tambul will facilitate Krishna's flute playing. His tones will become more melodious. And remember, he's always like exploring new territory with his flute. He's always increasing his performance, if you will. No end to that. So he can play the flute and sing even more beautifully and even more beautifully than yesterday, than 1 minute before, and so on. So Krishna can chew tambula all the times he wants. That has another purpose. Okay, let's go to some of the comment commentaries of our great acharyas, just to give a close to this verse, they will share some very interesting insights. Especially, I like to concentrate on what Srila Sanatana Goswami Pat says in his Brihad Vaishnava Toshni. So to begin with, Srila Sanatana Prabhu says, here, in this verse, last verse, Sukadev concludes by intending to signify the following. The ladies, he's like kind of paraphrasing Sukadev, the ladies described more pastimes of this sort and of other kinds. How many of those can I narrate? No? Like Sukadev Goswami implies, I'm sharing this here, but there are so much more that they were absorbed in describing and remembering. So as our Guru Maharaj always mentioned, do not ever think that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the whole story about Krishna. There's nothing else to be known. That's like a brief recap of one day in the life of Krishna. Which is, of course, it's an ending, and we see the commentaries of our acharyas and the books written on the basis of the Bhagavatam, and so much more is there. So the idea is here the same. No? Bhagavad-gita is not only the verses from 7 to 19 that we know, and there's nothing else in between. No? And before, after, during, so many other things, but this is one particular portal of that we are receiving. Sanatana Goswami continues explaining some of the words of the verse. Ebam bidaha, the first words, compound words, such, remember, the first such pastimes, refer to how the krida or the lilas of Krishna are such that they enchant the whole world. So that will be the idea of such. The pastimes of Krishna are of such nature that they enchant everyone. They are Krishna. Krishna is non different from Nam, Rupa, Guna, Lila. Form, qualities, pastimes are himself. He's absolute. There's no duality. There's not him and something else. Everything else exists in connection to him. What to speak of his most intimate expressions as form, Rupa, Guna, Lila. So, since he is all attractive, Krishna, therefore his lila is all attractive, Krishna. So, ebam bidam is such. There are such pastimes. Their pastimes are such that everyone is attracted. And why? To further clarify this, comes the word Bhagavata in the verse. Bhagavata. Because he is Bhagavan. Here we have, again, the gopis won't call Krishna Bhagavan in the Bhagavad-gita, God. Because their mood is not that one, in Vrindavan nobody thinking those terms, but Sukadeva Goswami, he does so. The narrative of the Bhagavatam is very nicely a combination of Madhurya and Aishwarya, if you will, intimacy and majesty. So we are immersed, thrown into a pool of intimacy when the description of the Vrindavan Lilas are there, but if you pay close attention, always Sukadeva Goswami starts or ends the narration putting all that in context by invoking words like Bhagavan. Like I said the other day, first verse of the Rasa Lila, the most intimate of intimate things in the Bhagavatam, starts with the word Bhagavan. So Bhagavan means God. And the last verse of the Rasa Lila starts with Vishnu. Vikriditam Brajavadurviri Iram Cha Vishnu, which is God. Now, like you say, in the midst of those two verses, Krishna is dancing with ladies and celebrating and embracing and with many ladies, and it seems, well, what's going on? It seems like an ordinary boy dancing with many girls at night. What this has to do with transcendence? He cannot be God. That's what the British thought when they went to India. They say, oh, this Krishna Bhakti is nice, but when they reach Bhagavatam, they say, oh, everything is ruined here. My God. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is one thing. Krishna in the Bhagavatam is another thing. Although one is pointing to the other. But the first and last verse of the Rasa Lila is saying Bhagavan, Bhagavan. Like implying, Bhagavan is he who has six opulences. Which are the six opulences of Bhagavan? Let's recap them because we will explain them here now in this connection. Bhagavan is he who has supreme
wealth,
supreme wealth, supreme knowledge, supreme beauty, supreme, yeah, renunciation, detachment,
strength.
Supreme strength, and supreme fame. So all these desirable qualities that we are dying for in this world, he has all of them to the maximum degree. So he's totally beautiful, totally wealthy, but totally detached. So generally you don't find this. Here you find someone who is partially wealthy, partially beautiful, because what is beauty in this world? Again, what is wealth in this world? But generally those people are not detached. They are attached to their wealth, attached to their... they don't have that much knowledge. But Bhagavan has all the things combined properly. So every quality is like balancing the other and makes like for the all attractive, for the perfect person. So here Sukadeva Goswami, this is why the pastimes of Krishna are all attractive, because he is Bhagavan. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the supreme form, the supreme personality, as Srila Prabhupada will say, of God. And Sanatana Goswami said, he's Bhagavan exhibiting his unlimited power in specific ways. So by power, here you ultimately, what's the most powerful power? Love. If you want to control someone, the ultimate control is love. Of course, you will be controlled as well. It's a two-way street. You can control someone, as our Guru Maharaj will say, by physical force, and I throw you in a cage, or by psychic manipulation. You are not aware I'm controlling you, but I'm controlling you. That's more subtle. Or by love. That's full comprehensive, full-fledged control. But the two enter into that equation. Full control. So that's the infinite power, ultimately, of Bhagavan. He's controlling everyone in a specific way, says Sanatana Goswami, which will be also in a very unique way, very intimate way. This is going on between him and the Vrajavasis. So these six qualities that define Bhagavan are found here in the Venu Gita, are found in Krishna's relationship with the gopis. Especially, again, we define, there's another very nice definition of Bhagavan in the Bhagavatam. I mentioned that throughout the course, you remember? Bhagavan bhakta bhaktimam. This is a very nice line in the Bhagavatam. So Bhagavan, who is Bhagavan? He who is bhakta bhaktimam. He who is the bhakta of his bhaktas, the devotee of his devotee, he is Bhagavan. That's the Bhagavatam's definition. Because the definition of the six attributes is given by Parashar Moni in Vishnu Purana, which of course we honor. But the Bhagavatam gives its own definition of Bhagavan, which is special for us. And he is the bhakta of his bhaktas. So of course that applies especially here. So for example, how does this apply in connection of Krishna? Not so much Vishnu and Vaikuntha having all opulence, but Krishna and Vrindavan with the gopis here. So he's supremely wealth. Which is that wealth? The wealth of Prem. Golokir Premadam. So the wealth he has for them, the wealth they have for him, he becomes wealthier by the love he received from the gopis. So in that sense, he's Bhagavan. He has supreme wealth. Ultimately, the supreme wealth is the wealth of love. He's supremely beautiful. Why? Because of the love of the gopis. As we mentioned, the love of the gopis, or the love of the Vrajavasis, of course, but here in particular the gopis. The more someone loves Krishna, the more Krishna's beauty enhances. He's enhanced by the love he's receiving. And the more his beauty enhances, the more the devotees want to dedicate themselves to serve that beauty. So the two of them are increasing exponentially. Krishna's beauty increases, and the devotee wants to serve that beauty, so their service disposition increases, and when that increases, Krishna's beauty increases, and the two of them are engaged in a competition, and none of them accept defeat. So, that's the second, beauty. How beauty plays out in this particular context. Wealth, beauty, Bhagavan, Vrajavasis, renunciation. What's renunciation? How Krishna renunciation? He's not renouncing to the gopis, even though it seems. But actually, he's renouncing to everything that is pratikul or this unfavorable to their union. Even though it seems that he's not being favorable to the union, actually, he's creating the stage for the union to happen in the most perfect form. And so sometimes we may think like that. Why Krishna is not making things easier? I'm trying to surrender to him and it's not happening like it should have. You don't have a clue what's the best for you. So trust that Krishna is making all arrangements for everything to happen. And when that happens, you're like, oh yeah. Do you look back? Oh yeah, this was, I could have never imagined such a perfect plan, basically. You have to have faith and patience as well. So Krishna is making all this arrangement and exhibiting his renunciation, also renunciation in the form of, it seems he's a lusty boy, a womanizer, a playboy, attracted by ladies, but he's totally detached, actually. So he's not attracted to the gopis by lust, in other words. It's another way of expressing he remains renunciant. He's attracted in the context of prem, but in the context of any other form of attraction, he's not attracted. He's not attracted by anything separate from pure love, even though it may take the form of something else. So three, renunciation. Wealth, beauty, renunciation. Now let's go to knowledge. Knowledge, we mentioned that one. There was a knowledge, Krishna's knowledge of what's going on in the heart of the gopis. He's actually aware of what's taking place there. And as I mentioned, he's making all the arrangements for the Purvarag to reach an end, to reach a peak, and then to reach an end in the form of the next stage and getting closer and closer to the consummation of their relationship. Five, fame. Krishna's famous, Venugita. How? Krishna plays the flute, and the song of the flute spread in the whole of Raj, and every single species in Vrindavan start to know about the flute and start to sing the praises of the flute. So Krishna's fame is spread throughout the forest and throughout the villas and throughout everywhere. And finally, strength. So again, Krishna's strength ultimately lies in the love of his devotees, in the glance of Sri Radhas. We gave the example of the Govardhan Lila that will happen after Venugita. Krishna was holding the heel, and at one point Balaram saw him looking at Radha, and it say he received the strength from her to her main primary shakti to hold the heel for a week. So in this way, these six qualities that made for Bhagavan, the word Bhagavan is here, play out in this particular way in connection to the gopis and the Nugi. Let's continue with what Sanatan Goswami has to say. Vrindavana Charina. What does it mean, Vrindavana Charina, remember? Like walking, wandering, roaming. He's roaming in Vrindavan. So for Sanatan Goswami, that Krishna roams in Vrindavan, he describes that he has fun at will. That means that Krishna roams in Vrindavan. He's Satya Sankalpa. That's a very nice term that he invokes in this connection. Satya Sankalpa means whatever Krishna wants to happen, happens immediately. So at will. He has free will in every sense of the term. Whatever he wants immediately is facilitated by the arrangement of Yogamaya. So that the fact that he roams in Vrindavan means he's carefree, totally walking at will and having fun and playing and doing whatever he likes. No? He does whatever he likes, however he likes, whenever he likes, and everyone likes him. Try to imitate Krishna. Try to do whatever you like, whenever you like, however you like. Nobody will like you. Everyone will say, you are a selfish, whimsical fellow, just thinking about yourself, self-centered, I don't want to see your face. But Krishna does whatever he likes, however, whenever, and everyone likes him. I mean, you have to be all attractive for that equation to work. So it works in his case. Srila Jiva Goswami, in connection to Vrindavana Charina, he mentions, here it is clearly implied that Krishna has that sort of eternal pastimes by the sense of tatilya or habit in the word Vrindavana Charina. Like he roams in Vrindavan in present tense. So Jiva Goswami implies this present tense implies this is happening continuously. This is actually on an eternal level. It's not only happening here in this point on earth, but there is a corresponding Golok in which this takes place continuously. And that those ladies, Jiva Goswami said, always have those types of emotion. In other words, we could say, there's in some place, in some planet Earth, in some Boma Lila, there is some group of gopis experiencing Purvarag and singing Venugita. as we always hear, no? In some planet Earth, in some Lila, this particular pastime is taking place. Venugita is always going on somewhere. Let's continue with Sanatan Goswami's purport before we reach the very special conclusion given by Sukadev Goswami to conclude. He says, the use of the word tat in this verse, tat means him. Sorry in Spanish. They use the word tat. The gopis use the word tat, which means him, because they cannot pronounce Krishna's name. They are in the last verse. This is too much at this point. On account of a special heartache by the burning of the fire of love. So at this point, they are so much beyond themselves that if they just happen to pronounce one of Krishna's many names, who knows what may happen. So they refer to him as Tat. In this case, him. Sanatana Goswami continues, the sense is they became greatly pained by the continuous increase of a mass of prem. As regards to gopyaha or gopis, that is their very nature. Remember, gopya has to do with gupt, with hiding their bhava. Thus, by the increase of the wealth of their prem, their good fortune, which exceeds all, is implied. So, again, only with one word, which means he, all the things that Sanatana Goswami is implying and showing us. Now, why they say him and do not say Krishna, Govinda, Damodar, and so on. And depicting the particular condition in which their hearts are overwhelming at this point, especially exceeding prem coming. As we will see, it will converge in their meeting with Krishna, as we will see today, as it is hinted in this verse, interestingly. So in such a condition, it is said that the gopis attain, that's almost the last expression of the verse, tan mayatayam. So tan, we say tan or tat, mayatayam. Mayatayam is like oneness with, like when you say Krishna mai, she is full of Krishna. So tan mayatayam, they became full of him. Or they became imbued with Krishna. The gopis became, here Sukadeva Goswami, imbued with Krishna. Or Jiva Goswami translates this tanmayatayam. The gopis became possessed. They are being possessed by his pastimes. So they are possessed of that. Try to imagine what must it mean to be possessed by the pastimes of Krishna. So basically, some acharyas will say that the gopis reached such a level of absorption in Krishna that for a moment they even behaved like if they were Krishna. Sometimes that happened in very unique peaks of madness. Not because they are engaged in the goal of Brahma Sayuja or something, because Brahma Sayuja has nothing to do with now I'm Krishna. In Brahma Sayuja, there's no awareness of I am anything, because there's no sense of I to begin with. It's difficult to describe in words. But in the madness, the gopis here are reaching a point where they are walking, as we know, talking, walking, sleeping, doing whatever. They are totally immersed in remembering Hari, the pastimes of Hari, always eager to meet him, and that is not happening, that is increasing their longing. And in this way, they are surviving. In some other sections of the Bhagavatam, then in Rasa Lila, that will be described when the gopis will meet Krishna, Krishna dances with them for a while, and he disappears, and they start to look for Krishna, they cannot find him. Tanmanaskas tadalapas tadvichesas tadadmika tatunami bhagayantu matmayam tanmayanti maya. That's nice. Tanmanaskas tadalapas tadvichesas tadadmika. Well, that's the important part. Tatunami bhagayantu satmagarin tanmam. So the first part is tanmanaskas tadalapas. Their words became absorbing him. Their thoughts became absorbing him. Tadvichestas tadadmikaha. With their bodies, they start to imitate Krishna's pastime. And tadadmika. They attain tadatmya, which is this same situation of kind of oneness. They became like Krishna. They start to feel, I'm Krishna. Oh no, I'm Krishna. In becoming so much obsessed in separation from him. And somehow surviving in separation. Dharayanti tikrichana, prayapranan katanchana, pratyaga manasan dishar balavyomi madadmika. When Krishna is sending Uddhava to Vrindavan with a message for the gopis, he's saying, the gopis are barely alive in separation from me. They are struggling very hard to keep themselves alive. So please send these messages and give their life back, basically. He describes in a very detailed way the agony of this group is in separation from their beloved. And then let's go to the word mita, which is I could say, one of the most important words of this verse. Mostly we will conclude with an explanation of this verse, which will be crucial in connection towards the fruit of the whole Venu Gita. Mm-hmm. So mitta can mean many things. One of them is mutually. Mm-hmm. So mutually refers to how the gopis are sharing with one another, as we mentioned, their absorption in Krishna, sharing a common interest, a common attraction, and nourishing each other with that. That's what Sadhu Sangha is about, as Krishna says in the Gita, Chatushloki. Machitamat gata pranavodayamta parashparam katayamtas chamam nityam tushyanti charamanticha. Ninth verse of 10th chapter, Krishna is saying, my devotees are absorbed in me, their lives are absorbed in me, they enlighten one another, speaking about me permanently. That does never stop. Tushyanti charamanticha. In this way, they nourish one another, they give a special pleasure to one another, sharing intimately with me in the center. So that's a very nice. There are many verses in Shastra about this intimate exchange that you ultimately will find in the example of the gopis here. There's one nice verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that I heard recently. I will briefly mention, not enter into details. 11th canto, 3rd chapter, verse 30. It says, Parasparanukatanam pavanam bhagavad yasaha mito ratir mitastu stir nibritir mita atmana. So the word mita, which we are explaining from this verse, mutually, comes in this verse three times. Mito, mitas, mita. So basically speaks about parasparakatam. Paraspara means mutual also. Anukatanam means continuous discussion about Krishna's person. Pavanam bhagavad yasya. Bhagavad yasya means about the glories yasya of Bhagavan, who are pavanam. Pavanam means like patita pavana, like purifier, basically. And what happens as a result of engaging in that continuous discussion? Mitoratir, mita means, again, mutual. So rati, what does it mean, rati? Attraction or love. So mutually there is attraction. No? Mutually they invoke this attraction. Mitoratir, then mitatusti. Tusti means satisfaction. Mutually they obtain some particular satisfaction. And nibritir mita atmana. And nibritir, cessation of material desires, mutually, mita. So they become detached from anything and they nourish bhakti, parishanu, bhavo, piraktya. So many verses in Bhagavatam in this connection. So mita can refer to this, to how the gopis mutually are embracing one another, enlightening one another, sharing their hearts to one another in separation from Krishna. But there is some special meaning on the word mita, which will give us a glimpse about what will happen after this Venu Gita. So I would like to conclude here. And that's especially nicely revealed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on this verse, his Tararta Darshini. Although, also Sridhar Swami, more ancient commentator, and Srinath Chakravarti, also more ancient commentator to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, also agree with him on this idea. So let me read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about mita and what's the implication of it here. According to Amara Kosh, which is a Sanskrit dictionary, according to Amara Kosh, the word mitta, again generally translated as mutually, and referring in this word, in this verse, how the gopis describe to one another the effects of the flute. That was the theme of the Venu Gita. But according to Amara Kosh, the meaning of mitta ultimately refers to the following. Mito nyonyam rahasi api. So mitas means anyonyam, which means mutually, and rahas, which means secret place. In other words, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, meeting one another in a secluded place. That's the ultimate implication of mita. Thus, Vishwanath continues, following after their boyfriend, the gopis met their beloved Krishna and actually engaged in different intimate pastimes with him. And their as if this is not enough, he says, this is because the gopis later will say in the Bhagavatam. And then now he will quote one verse from the Pranaya Gita, which is the next song of these six songs of the gopis that I mentioned at the beginning of our series. You remember? Venu Gita, Pranaya Gita, Gopi Gita, Yugal Gita, Viraha Gita, and Brahmar Gita. Appear in different chapters of the 10th canto. This is the first, Venu Gita chapter 21st. The next Gita is Pranaya Gita, which are some verses in chapter 29. Chapter 29 is the first of the five chapters about what? Rasalila, called Rasa Pancha Dhyaya. Chapter 29 till 33, the circular dance. So there's verse 36. And we remember, Rasalila is the moment of the official consummation of the relationship. But in this moment, Pranaya Gita is just briefly, and also I'm giving some trailer, our next song someday, let's see when. But Pranaya Gita has to do with Krishna playing the flute, as you know, very briefly. All the gopis running after the flute, in this case it happens, they leave all behind. And when they meet Krishna in the midst of the night, Krishna is looking at them and saying, what are you doing here? Oh, it's so dark. We are in the midst of the forest. You should be at your houses doing your household chores. Your family may be waiting for you. Go back home. And the gopis are like, what? You called us. We heard our names in the flute and so on. So Krishna presents certain arguments for the gopis to return. Although the Sanskrit lends itself in such a way that every time Krishna is saying then return, it can also refer, you don't have anything else apart from staying here with me. So it's like a dual discourse. So the gopis are like, what does he is actually meaning? So Pranaya Gita will be the reply of the gopis to this sending them to back to their homes by Krishna. So in one of the verses, verse 36, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes this verse as to confirm how the gopis united with Krishna before the Rasalila, on some level, not on consummation level, but on some level. After Venu Gita, before Rasalila. So again, in verse 36, 29th chapter, 10th canto, the gopis address Krishna saying, O lotus-eyed one, from the time we touched your feet with our hands, we could no longer live with our husbands. So again, that's Rasalila has not begun yet. Krishna played the flute, they just ran there, they did not even start the dancing and celebration. But the gopis are expressing, from the time we touch your feet and so on. So it implies some meeting was there before Rasalila and after Venu Gita. So Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that. This is, since the gopis say this in the Bhagavatam, it is reasonable to say that on this day, the gopis enjoyed with Krishna. On this day in which the Venu Gita is coming to a close and the gopis, Purvarag is like exploding almost, and they are somehow, although they say, let's go somewhere else, not what the flute is, actually they are saying, let's go there, that's no other way. And eventually they will have some form of meeting, intimate, but not, again, something that as comprehensive as to be considered the consummation of the relationship. So that will come in stages. We'll see how this Purvarag is gradually over. It's not, okay, till yesterday I never saw Krishna, tomorrow full consummation. No, it's happening in installments. We will see. After this, there's a meeting here. They will have the Gopi Vastra Harana Lila, where Krishna is stealing the clothes of the gopis, some more proximity there. Then Govardhan Lila, one come, Krishna lifting the hill for 7 days and giving an interrupted darshan to the gopis who are seeing him with unblinking eyes. So all this is escalating more and more and more, and finally after Govardhan Lila comes Rasa Lila, the full consummation of the relationship. So again, in this verse, some brief meeting has happened. Of course, we already described a brief meeting before in the verse of the Pulindis, remember? When Krishna played the flute, Radha fainted. Krishna were there, touched with the petal of the lotus that got smeared by her kumkum that ended up in Krishna's feet, and we know the rest of the story. So again, something happened, and interestingly, as I think I mentioned before, the very next chapter in the Bhagavatam after this will be, again, what? Gopi Vastrahani Anandila, which is the pastime where Krishna steals the clothes of the gopis who are worshipping Katyayani Devi for obtaining Krishna as their husband. And Krishna will appear in front of them, they will have some interaction, he will steal their clothes, he will give the clothes back with some conditions in between. He's accepting them as wives, unofficially, if you will. So all this, again, is getting closer and closer to the consummation. There's some secret meeting in the Gopi Vastrahanana Lila, there's some secret marriage, then comes the 1 week uninterrupted darshan of Govardhan Lila, and in this way closer and closer to Rasa Lila. And in Rasa Lila, what will happen? Among many things, Krishna will expand, as it is described, in one form for each particular gopi. And it is mentioned that there are millions of gopis in the Rasa Lila. So Krishna will take millions of corresponding forms to sing and dance with each gopi, to give a very personal, a comprehensive consummation of the relationship to each and every particular gopi. So after this final consummation, the remaining gopi gitas will unfold, basically. Pranaya Gita comes right at the beginning. Let's see when we can do Pranaya Gita. That might be the... We have done some of the Gitas last years out of order. I did Gopi Gita, I think, like 3 years ago. And we did Brahma Gita last year. So now we are finishing Beno Gita. We have three remaining ones. Pranaya Gita, Jugal Gita, and Viraha Gita. So, but the next one is Pranaya Gita. So let's see when that can happen. When that day will be mine. So before finishing, I would like to share one verse, which is some kind of Ashirvad Sloka, which is, it's not here in the Bhagavatam in this chapter, but it's pronounced by Mahaprabhu, and it's a very nice verse. I like to quote it and to recite that even as a daily part of my sadhana, which is invoked by Mahaprabhu himself, and which speaks about our attitude towards the nectar coming from what the gopis have to give, if you will. So the verse says, Krishna guna ruparasa ganda sabda paraya yeshuda swadi gopi gan tasa bara grasa sisi ani panchandriya sisi tribhikya iraka je jivan. So basically, the translation, I'll read the literal translation just in case. Mahaprabhu is saying, the gopis constantly drink the nectar of Krishna's form, his qualities, taste, fragrance, sound, and touch, all corresponding with the five senses. Coming to beg from them, from the gopis, the remnants of their feast, are my mind, the mendicant, with the senses, his five raj disciples, in the hope that they will be able to maintain their lives. It's a very poetic way of saying, I want just to maintain myself alive by the remnants of what the gopis are experiencing. Of course, that's in a particular way could be applicable to, ultimately, specifically to Manjari Bhav, because Mahaprabhu is like begging the gopis, give me the remnants of your experience, of your sensory experience with Krishna. Let my, the mendicant of my mind, with his Raj disciples, the five senses, survive on the strength of what the remnants that I receive from your particular experience in direct connection with Krishna. So in this way, we follow in the footsteps of Sriman Mahaprabhu. We try to pray in that light and in this way to be blessed by the Braja Gopikas, who again, as we always say, Bandhananda Brajasrinam Padarenu Abhikshnu Sad Samhari Katvat Gitam Punati Bhuvanatriyam. Shivman Uda Mahasaya, when he left Vrindavan, mentions this. I bow my head perpetually to the lotus feet of the ladies of the village of Nanda Maharaj, whose powerful, influential kirtan is so comprehensive that it is purifying the three worlds. So, in the hope of being sprinkled by a drop of that kirtan, we pray from here. And in this way, we will conclude our narration of Beno Gita. Also, of course, as part of any closing of this type of series, where we have taken shelter, trying to take shelter in so many personalities and take care of their help and guidance, we offer our pranam. To begin with, we can offer one pranam to the Braja Gopikas, who are the main chanters, if you will, of the Vaidvita, the main characters here, as well as to Sukadeva Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj, because in their dialogue, this happens to manifest the Gopi Gita. We offer pranam, of course, to Sri Krishna, to Dauji Gopal, Krishna Balaram, who are also very instrumental in many of the sections of the Venu Gita. And of course, we offer our pranam to all the Brajavasis who are somehow involved in each and every verse of the Venu Gita, whether in human form, animal form, vegetable form, watery form, cloud form, even to the non-Brajavasis who just happen to be there, devis or passing clouds or whatever. And of course, we always offer our pranam also to Sriman Mahaprabhu, our Ishtadev in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, our pranam to the six Goswamis, especially Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad, Srila Jiva Goswami Pad in this case, who have showered us with very unique commentaries to the verses, and of course by extension to many, to all of the other commentators of the Bhagavatam, from whom we have derived so much benefit, Sridhar Swami, Bhalavacharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so many. Of course, we offer our pranam to Srila Gurudev, who's by his mercy and instruction. I've asked him before starting this series if he was, if he agreed with me trying to share something regarding Venu Gita. So he agreed, he gave his consent and blessing. So it is by his blessing that whatever success may happen from this meeting is taking place. And of course, also the pranam to each and every one of you who have been blessing, all of you also connected online, who have been following this series very diligently, day after day, for all more than a month. So that totally we have been 24 classes. So by your grace also this Venu Gita has taken place, and now it's being put to rest. But at least for today, remember, this is something to go back, so you can hear the audios again, you can read the verse again, you can read your notes again, and you can try to imbibe more and more the content of this Venu Gita till we reach that day, which will be somehow part of the whole scenario, in one part of the other. But this is the idea. All these concepts are to be inhabited, all these portals are to be entered into, and all these sections of the Bhagavatam are unique invitations for us to enter and serve into eternity. So, thank you so much to all of you. Srila Gurudev ki jai. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Venu Gita ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Gaur Pramana Hari Om.